You are listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. I'm Jennifer Calogeras, and I'm recording on Friday, March 24th, 2023. This is episode 99. As I'm nearing my 100th episode, which I can't even believe, I'm going to be asking listeners how we should celebrate. The festivities will begin today with an awesome book giveaway, but how else should we celebrate 100 episodes of book recommendations? I need ideas, people. You can email me at booksaremypeople@gmail.com. The dog update remains the same. By now, I think you all know that if we were reunited, I would be posting everywhere. It's been the rainiest winter we've had in years, which just breaks my heart, but I think the rain is done for a while and it's officially spring, and I remain hopeful that my dog and I will be reunited and this will all be a terrible dark blip in our past. In the meantime, today is the first day of spring break for my two boys, and I have been so out of it lately that I had no idea spring break started today. We don't have any huge plans. My 17-year-old is touring some colleges. Both kids are going to be counselors at a spring break sports camp, and I plan to do a lot of reading and writing and art. I've been going to physical therapy for my back. I have a compressed disc, and they finally fixed me up enough so that I can run again, so I've been enjoying the extra endorphins. And I think this is our last hockey-free week before spring league starts. I really enjoyed the break. Really enjoyed it. But spring league is pretty relaxed, just games, no practices. The problem is one child is playing three games a week and the other two, so driving wise, it's still the same wacky commitment. And in the spring league, there's no checking for those of you who aren't forced to have hockey players in your life. Checking is when you slam a person's body against the boards. It's terrifying to watch. I feel it viscerally. And I've seen a lot of bones get broken and concussions happen. So a spring without checking is delightful. But enough about me. It's time for some bookish news. According to the New York Times, Ian Falconer, the author of the children's favorite Olivia series, has passed away at 63 of kidney failure. What I didn't know was that before he was an author and illustrator, he designed opera sets with David Hockney, as well as drew covers for The New Yorker. We read all of the Olivia books to our kids when they were little and watched the TV series, which was one of the lesser annoying cartoons I watched with my kids. It was very exciting back then to find a cartoon that wasn't crazy making. The original Olivia, published in 2000, was a Caldecott honor book and was known for its understated black, white, and red illustrations. When asked why he chose a pig as his heroine, Falconer said that pigs' heads are too big for their bodies, just like kids. The Women's Prize Longlist nominations have been announced, and I'm delighted to share that many of the books are Books Are My People recommendations, including Memphis by Tara M. Stringfellow and The Bandit Queens by Perini Schroff, who was a recent guest on the show. You can listen to Perini speak about The Bandit Queens on episode 94. There are many other nominees, including Maggie O'Farrell's The Marriage Portrait, which I read and highly recommend, and two books I can't wait to read, including Glory by Noviolet Bulawayo and The Dog of the North by Elizabeth McKenzie, which I recently purchased but have not yet read. The winner will be announced on June 14th, and I will leave a link to the entire list of nominees in my newsletter, which you can sign up for in the show notes or on my Instagram page through my link tree. Mona Awad's Bunny will be adapted into a film. This is a novel I recommended when it came out, about a young writer in grad school who falls in with a dangerous crowd. There's definite Heathers vibes to it, if you know that film, but it also explores the experience of being in an MFA program. Apparently, the novel blew up on TikTok. I missed that whole side note because I'm 46. And a Bunny movie fan casting hashtag went viral, getting 4.1 billion views. Shows you how powerful TikTok is. I do have an account on TikTok as a voyeur, but I couldn't tell you what my account name is, and I haven't been on in like a year. So I'm eager to hear about casting choices for this novel. And that's it for news. I am delighted to share that as part of the 100th episode celebration, I am giving away one copy of Jenny Jackson's Pineapple Street. If you haven't heard of this novel yet, you certainly will see it everywhere soon. And Jenny Jackson is our fantastic guest for today, so you'll hear about it right now. I will announce a winner on April 14th, and all you need to do to put your name in the hat to be eligible to win is sign up for my newsletter and make a comment on my Instagram post. That's it. I will choose a winner on April 14th. This contest is open to U.S. mailing addresses only. And I will leave a link to my newsletter and to my Instagram account in the show notes section, but you can always find me at Books Are My People. Jenny Jackson is a vice president and executive editor at Alfred A. Knopf. She was inspired to write Pineapple Street in the early days of the pandemic when she packed up her own Brooklyn Heights clan and went to stay with her in-laws in Connecticut. As countless people across the country similarly absconded to the basements and guest rooms of their parents or in-laws, constantly surrounded by the trash and treasure of their loved ones' past, it felt like one giant psychological experiment. For Jackson, a novel about family, marriage, and ancestral homes soon began percolating, and Pineapple Street, a story about a family blessed with wealth and privilege, a house filled with their fancy junk, and the outsider who sees them for who they truly are, was born. Hello, Jenny. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where are you calling in from today?
I am calling in from, believe it or not, Brooklyn Heights, where I live.
No way.
Yes. You know, I actually wrote Pineapple Street while living on Pineapple Street.
I was wondering if there was really a Pineapple Street. I didn't go to a map to check it out, but I clearly don't know Brooklyn Heights that well, or else I would have known the answer. No.
Tiny, tiny little nook. It's about 3 blocks by 3 blocks, and they are called the Fruit Streets, Pineapple, Orange, and Cranberry.
So in your own words, tell us what Pineapple Street is about.
Sure. Well, I've already given you the setting. So it's the story of 3 women in one Brooklyn Heights family and their different relationships with money. We have Darlie, who was born into money, and then we have Sasha, who's the in-law, and she's married into this family. And then we have Georgiana, who is the millennial conscience of the family and who wants to give all of her money away.
It's so often seen as taboo to talk about money. I'm curious what the impetus was for writing a novel about generational wealth.
Well, first of all, whenever something is uncomfortable, I pretty much am like drawn to talk about it. Like if somebody is like, wow, I once had a crush on my cousin, I'm like, tell me more. But really for me, it came from reading this article in the New York Times called The Rich Kids Who Want to Tear Down Capitalism about these millennial heirs who feel that their fortunes are at odds with their moral values. And I thought, gosh, we're living in this fascinating moment where more money is set to be handed down from the boomers to the millennials. And yet we're also living in this age of extreme income inequality. And these young people have seen Occupy Wall Street and they think, huh, inherited wealth is intrinsically problematic. And so I wanted to write a novel that got at those ideas, but was also a family story about people who love each other and just see things a little differently.
What made you want to shift from being an editor to writing a novel? And how has your experience as an editor informed your approach to novel writing?
You know, I wrote this book during the sort of fall, winter of 2020, where everyone was working remotely. And I missed going out. I missed going to parties. I missed seeing my friends. I missed gossiping and flirting and just all that fun sparkle that makes life so enjoyable. And so I put it all on the page. You know, the book was a chance for me to let my characters do the things that I wanted to be doing, to go to restaurants, to flirt, to have fights, to fall into these intense love affairs. And so that's why I wrote the book. But I really think that I learned an incredible amount from being an editor. You know, I've worked with some of the greatest writers over the past 20 years. And so they taught me how to structure a novel, how to write in close third person, how to rotate point of view, how to build a joke. So I've just kind of learned at the knee of some of the greats.
So sort of like you went to graduate school through your life experience.
Okay, how did that happen?
Right. You've edited, as you mentioned, some incredibly successful and lauded novels. Can you mention a few of your favorites? Which I'm sure is hard to pick, as well as share what it feels like when a book you've worked on reaches a certain level of success and reaches out to such a wide audience and resonates with that audience.
Sure. So I've published Kevin Kwan's Crazy Rich Asians, Emily St. John Mandel's Station 11, Chris Bajalian's The Flight Attendant, Cormac McCarthy's The Passenger, Gabrielle Zevin's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, Bridget Jones' Mad About the Boy. So a big range of bestsellers from, you know, really commercial to really literary. And, you know, I was reading this article a while ago about the importance of being in the moment. And they gave this example. Are you the kind of person who takes a hike and gets to the top of a mountain and looks at the view and says, oh, I am here seeing this view? Or are you the kind of person who gets to the top of the mountain and says, oh my gosh, I can't wait to get back here and show this to people? And, you know, the article was pressing you to be more that first kind of person. That's not me. I'm the second kind of person. I get to the top of the mountain and I'm like, I got to drag some people up here to see this. And that's why I love publishing books, because when a book becomes a bestseller, when a book explodes, I feel like I've dragged all these people up the mountain and I'm like, look at this great thing I found. You know, I get such joy from spreading the word about something that I love.
It's like you're conducting the zeitgeist. You're in charge.
That's a dream. I love thinking of it that way.
What are you working on next, both in terms of editing and creative writing?
I have this novel that I'm publishing. It's coming out in July, and it's called The Rachel Incident. The author is Caroline O'Donohue, and she's an Irish writer. This is the first adult novel of hers to be published in the United States, and it is funny and brilliant about friendship and growing up. It's about a young woman who works at a bookstore and lives with her best friend who says he's not gay, and the love affairs that tie them together forever. So it's called The Rachel Incident. It's an incredible novel. And then I myself am leaving Brooklyn Heights on the page, not in person, but I'm going to try and write a novel set in my hometown of Ipswich, Massachusetts, about marriage.
Nice. Well, I cannot wait to read it. Your book was so fantastic and has the most beautiful cover I've seen.
Oh, it does. I know. Thank you. They really nailed it.
So we're going to move on to book recommendations. Jenny, you can start us off with your first pick.
Oh my gosh, I love this part. So I just have to tell everybody about this book, Sorrow and Bliss by Meg Mason. I did not work on this book. There is no reason for me to recommend this except for the fact that she is an undiscovered gem and American readers need to fall in love with Meg Mason and Sorrow and Bliss. And I like to think of this book as a chocolate pretzel novel. And I'm always looking for a chocolate pretzel novel. And what that means is that it is this surprising combination of sweet and salty, that it is funny, 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 but the narrator is prickly. The narrator just can't get out of her own way. And she is pushing away her husband and she is pushing away her sister and she is making her own life harder than she needs to. And so you follow her as she tries to figure out why she is just such a tricky person. But at the same time, her humor is so incredible and you love her and you're rooting for her and you're just giggling the entire time you read it. So Sorrow and Bliss is just a truly spectacular, spectacular, enveloping read.
That sounds like a perfect read for me. I love humor and I love characters. I won't say unlikable characters, but characters who have a little bit of grit to them.
She has an edge. She has grit. That's a great way of putting it.
My first pick is Women Are the Fiercest Creatures by Andrea Dunlop. This came out March 7th. This is a super quick read, perfect for perhaps an upcoming spring break. If you are all on the spring break track like I am, I just found out that my kids' spring break starts today. I have not been paying attention. This novel follows the drama surrounding the women in Jake Sarnoff's life. Jake is a tech giant. He created this social media platform called Strangers, which sounds a lot like Nextdoor, if anyone here is on that. And he's about to become a billionaire because his company is about to go public. So these are the women in his life that the novel's about. There's Anna, his first wife. They're divorced. They have teenage boys together, and she helped Jake build his company. Jessica is his new 15 years younger wife. She's 25 and pregnant. And then there's Sam, who runs a fitness studio where Jessica, the young pregnant wife, happens to attend. And the novel starts with Jake and Jessica discovering that their baby is missing, and then the novel reels back in time. And it's a novel about complex relationships, how ideas are born and who gets to claim them, and it explores the struggle that women feel in terms of trying to balance work and parenting. And again, that's Women Are the Fiercest Creatures by Andrea Dunlop. What is your second pick?
Oh, that sounds wonderful. My second pick is a debut novel by Monica Heise called Really Good, Actually. Now, Monica was a writer for the TV show Schitt's Creek, and you can feel a lot of that humor, that same sort of off-the-wall sense of humor in this book. So the title, Really Good, Actually, is more than a bit sarcastic. It's a novel about this young woman named Maggie, and Maggie is newly divorced after only 608 days of marriage, but who's counting? And she feels like a total failure. She is trying to figure out how to date. She's trying to figure out how to communicate with her friends in a world where they're all settling down for the first time, and she is on the opposite end of the spectrum. And so the novel takes us through her first year of single life, where she makes another divorced friend. She tries to date. She ends up moving into her boss's basement, makes some awful decisions, and keeps the reader laughing the entire way. It's called Really Good, Actually, and the author is Monica Heise.
I absolutely have to read this. Schitt's Creek right now is saving my life. As listeners know, my dog ran away 6 weeks ago, and the only thing I can watch on TV is Schitt's Creek because it just brings me so much joy. So I definitely have to read that book.
Yes.
My second pick could be perhaps a second cousin of your own novel, maybe a cousin that you have a crush on or not, but it's called The Latecomer by Jean Hand Corlitz. And this came out, this is a little bit backlisted. It came out in May of last year, and I read this book in December and realized I hadn't shared it yet on the podcast. Jean Hand Corlitz is the author of the brilliant novel The Plot, which came out in May of 2021, and I can't believe she published two novels, both so fabulous and different, in a year. Anyhow, The Latecomer is a family story about the Oppenheimers, a fictitious, wealthy New York family. Salo and Joanna initially meet at a funeral and eventually fall in love, get married, and during the early days of IVF, give birth to triplets, Harrison, Sally, and Lewin. The three children could not be more different. We learn about Joanna and Salo's history, then we get to know each of the kids, and the title, The Latecomer, refers to the Oppenheimers' fourth child they decide to have when the triplets head off to college. I cannot imagine starting all over with a baby once my kids go to college. So much is packed into this novel. It's about sibling relationships, family dynamics, academia, art, friendship, religion, privilege, and race. This is a fantastic read, and I think a great comp would be books by Meg Wolitzer and The Immortalist by Chloe Benjamin. And again, that's The Latecomer by Jean Hand Corlitz.
Well, I have a few comments. So I read that novel. I love that novel. I'm a huge fan of Jean Hand Corlitz. Also, fascinatingly, The Latecomer is set in the same neighborhood as Pineapple Street. They're both set in Brooklyn Heights, but I think about 20 years apart. And then, you know, what you just said about how surprising it is that she wrote this right after The Plot. So my insider knowledge as a publishing person is that she actually wrote The Latecomer before she wrote The Plot, but her publisher asked to publish them in the other order. Isn't that fascinating?
Wow. So they thought maybe the suspense novel would get a little more traction.
Yeah, and build her up so that she would get a nice big audience for the latecomer.
Thanks for giving us the inside scoop.
So my last recommendation is by Katherine Heine. And I hope people out there have read Katherine Heine, because if not, go back and read every single book she's written. She's the author of Single Carefree Mellow, of Standard Deviation, of Early Morning Riser. But today I'm recommending her new story collection, Games and Rituals. And Games and Rituals is funny, funny, funny about women and the insane decisions that we make when it comes to matters of the heart. There are stories about a woman taking care of her aging father. He swallows his hearing aid, believing it's a cashew, and she has to come and unravel this costly mistake for him. There's the story of a woman married to an actor and a discovery she makes about his life as she's reading her children a bedtime story. There's one of my very favorite stories, which is all set over the course of one snowy afternoon at an airport bar. We have a young woman who has reinvented herself and has a big fancy life in the city. She's come home to visit her parents and is trying to get out of there as fast as she can and fly back to her fancy life. But a snow delay traps her in an airport bar for the day. And drink by drink, we learn about the life that she has escaped and left behind. And when her ex-husband shows up at the terminal to give her a ride home after her flight is canceled, she is really reluctant to get in that car. So it's really a novel about romantic mistakes and hopes and friendship. And then there's also just one amazing story about a woman who goes to work really hungover wearing an old bridesmaid's dress that just makes me laugh and laugh. So again, it is Katherine Heine, Games and Rituals.
That sounds fantastic. I love a good short fiction collection. Well, those are all of our recommendations this week. Where can people find you on social media?
Please find me at Jenny Jackson Pineapple on Instagram.
And what are you going to be reading next?
Well, on my bedside table is a novel called Big Swiss by Jen Began. And I've just started and it's already hilarious.
I recommended that novel on this very show. I got an advanced review copy digitally and I love that book so much. I ran out and got myself the hard copy because I want that on my shelf forever. It is.
That is an endorsement.
It is a ride, let me tell you. Up next for me is We All Want Impossible Things by Catherine Newman. And don't forget to enter my giveaway for Jenny Jackson's Pineapple Street by commenting on my Instagram page. You'll look for the photo of the book, make a comment there, and make sure you're signed up for my weekly newsletter, chock full of more book recommendations. And thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. What a great conversation.
Links to all the books that we talked about today, including Jenny Jackson's fantastically thoughtful and entertaining Pineapple Street, can be found in the show notes section of this podcast or by visiting booksaremypeople.com. I'll be back in a week. And until then, I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week.